Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Ever since the murder of George Floyd by a police officer in Minneapolis, the spotlight has been on law enforcement officers who crossed the line, especially those who have allegedly engaged in criminal and/or violent activity. When officers are proven to be guilty of misconduct, you might assume that that would be a career-ending incident. Not so. Sometimes those officials find themselves working at similar jobs in other departments or security organizations. Carolina Public Press just released a three-part series, Stray Cops, looking into this phenomenon of the wandering officer. That's a police officer who leaves one department after being terminated for misconduct or under a disciplinary cloud and secures employment in another law enforcement agency. It happens more often than you might imagine. In fact, Carolina Public Press found examples of nearly 700 of these wandering officers in North Carolina. Today, a closer look at those findings with Carolina Public Press Executive Director Frank Taylor and Lucas Tomei, a staff reporter who wrote this series of articles for CPP, which you can find, by the way, on their website, carolinapublicpress.org, or on ours at wfae.org. Welcome, gentlemen. Thank you for being here.
Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Frank, I'm going to begin with you as the executive director of Carolina Public Press. What made you decide to look into this phenomenon?
Well, really, Lucas helped to generate the concept. We were reporting on a specific instance that does have mention in the series, but we did some just regular everyday reporting on an instance out of Washington County in the eastern part of the state, where there was a lawsuit and a lot of these stories are kind of complicated as officers move from location to location. But in this case, it was a complicated situation that we felt like, wow, this is happening here. We know about this as a phenomenon, but it would be really interesting to look at it on a bigger picture, look at the statewide situation with it. Can we quantify how much of this is going on? And Lucas was aware that some scholarship on this particular topic had been done by an expert at Duke University. So putting those two things together, we felt like this was a good project to look into for North Carolina. We developed it really over the course of a year of conversations and then the last 6 months or so of really intense work on the project.
And Lucas, you must love your job because this was not an easy task to undertake, it seems to me, because we know that it's often difficult to cross-tab cases of police misconduct from state to state because there is no one big database that catalogs all of that. But according to your reporting, limited data also makes it difficult to count this phenomenon happening here within the state of North Carolina. Why? I mean, don't records of officers and former employees travel with those people when they go from job application to job application?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, a key thing to keep in mind here is that a lot of the disciplinary records that belong to these police officers that may be bouncing departments stay with their past departments, and the onus is on their new hiring agencies to go to their previous employers and see what's going on. So what I gathered from my reporting is that oftentimes there is an information problem between agencies. Agencies are unable to either see what is in an officer's internal affairs file or personnel record file at their past agency, and therefore they may not even know who they're hiring.
You also report that the North Carolina Department of Justice switched to a new database in 2022, in which publicly available law enforcement employment data no longer gives a reason for why an officer separated from an agency. Why would they do that?
Yeah, it's a great question and an answer that I didn't get, in satisfactory detail from them. But you will notice that in our reporting, we look at officers who are active in 2022, and it's for that exact reason, because they switched the way they track their data 3 years ago, 4 years ago. We no longer really know what the situation is currently.
Does it seem, that's 2 years after George Floyd, about. Does it seem to be a deliberate attempt to obfuscate police officer records that maybe have gone awry? Or was it an oversight, do you think? Or is there any way to determine that?
It's hard to determine. I doubt it's deliberate, probably more along the lines of oversight on their parts. Maybe it's the fact that no one really took the time to look at these records, which are public data. They're kind of sitting there for years, and until now, no one really picked it up to take a look and count these previously dismissed officers, of which I said, we found 679 of them working in 2022 in all parts of the state.
So, Frank, using that data that's available from 2022, you were still able to identify almost 700 current cops whose previous agencies either fired them or they left under on some sort of a cloud. Clearly, those officers are not on any watch list. They aren't labeled as problem cops in any way. So, in sorting through this data, how did you identify those individuals, Frank?
Well, and I want to clarify one thing. Actually, that number only includes those, Lucas, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe it only includes those who were fired. So that
That's
does
correct.
not
Okay.
capture the ones who left under a cloud. And we know there are plenty of those where they say, resign or we're going to have to fire you. And it doesn't capture some other categories of things, officers who may have resigned but also were convicted of a crime. That's just not in that particular data set. And so there's lots of gaps that we can recognize immediately, and that's why I say this is an at least number. Now, as far as how we worked on, I think I'll defer that question to Lucas as far as how we identified officers we wanted to talk about. We certainly had some discussions, but Lucas really did the groundwork getting into the files and identifying cases that made sense to talk about.
Lucas?
Yeah, well, through public records requests, we got this massive data set from the State Department of Justice. It had something like hundreds of thousands of rows, which represented the employment histories of cops certified in the state going back to the 1970s. So, what I took out of that data set was the 31,000 of them who were active in 2022, which is when that data set was pulled from. And we found that 2% of them had dismissal records in their careers, even from a previous agency, not the ones they're currently working at. So about 1 in 50 cops in that data set had been hired after being previously dismissed from a past job.
So you had to do a lot of homework to get to the bottom of this, a lot of investigating and cross-tabbing, etc. It was difficult for you. Would it be equally difficult for police agencies looking at a new applicant coming in from a former department to find out the same information?
Probably not. I mean, there are state rules which mandate that hiring agencies do a background check on the officers they hire, and that includes what they call lateral transfers. These are officers who have already gone through police training, have been hired at one agency before, and are just moving agencies. So these aren't the same as rookie cops. And for those officers that are being hired, they must do a background investigation on them. And from talking to background investigators hired by sheriff's offices and other law enforcement departments, they told me that oftentimes what they will do is go to past agencies. The trouble for them, they told me, is that they can't always trust what they're seeing at these past agencies, or sometimes even past agencies may be reluctant to give up information, personnel files that they fear may open them up to legal liabilities if they give what they think is confidential information about a past employee.
Frank.
Yeah, I just want to point out that what Lucas is saying is absolutely right, but we also need to keep in mind what we found was a small number of people we talked to who we could see from the evidence were doing a good job. For instance, we singled out the city of High Point, was doing an excellent job of screening. They haven't had any wandering officers on their staff in the recent past. But we also see evidence that there are plenty of agencies that are not doing very effective background checks. I mean, the law requires that they do background checks, but it doesn't say what they have to do with them.
Lucas, you start your, this is a three-part series on the stray cops, and you start your first article in the series with the story of an officer in the Roanoke Rapids Police Department, and you say that, quote, "An officer who is found to have used excessive force against an unarmed person risks losing his career in law enforcement," but that did not happen in this case. Why not?
Yeah, so you're referring to the case of Mark Oakley, who was an officer with the Roanoke Rapids Police Department. He resigned from there in 2015. We later found out it was because while at the jail there, he had tased a handcuffed and unarmed detainee at that jail. He was allowed to resign from that department and later got hired in the nearby department of Warrenton. Well, in 2024, he was fired from Warrenton because of multiple civilian complaints and a State Bureau of Investigation looking into reports of him unnecessarily tasing other civilians. And eventually what happened was he was arrested by federal agents in 2025. And fascinatingly, between the time that he was fired from Warrenton and from when he was arrested in 2025, he still worked at another department in the town of Littleton for almost a year. And what the police chief said there was, well, we kept him on staff because what he said was we never had any problems with him here.
So if I counted correctly, after being forced to resign from the Roanoke Rapids Police Department, this individual went on to work for three other law enforcement agencies before the federal government stepped in and arrested him. Do they not check references at these police departments? Do they not look at police records? Do they not care, Frank?
Well, to the not caring, we also looked at the chief. And Luke, what did we find about the chief that had done the hiring there?
Yeah, well, we found both police chiefs in Warrenton and Littleton, where Oakley had worked, were also wandering officers. They had been dismissed from previous jobs in law enforcement before becoming chief. So we've found cases of wandering officers who eventually become have leadership positions at these departments and end up hiring more wandering officers to work for them. I think there's an old rule of the office that says someone in charge of hiring will end up hiring themselves. And we've kind of seen them in that case.
I want to come back to that particular situation because I've got questions about that later. But just because you make a mistake as a police officer or in any job, reporters make mistakes. And perhaps reporters make egregious errors and deliberate errors in some case and lose their jobs. It does not mean you can't reform. So in this case where a wandering cop or a stray cop goes on to become the leader of a police department and then hires other stray cops, could it be that that person found Jesus, essentially, and reformed and thinks that they can do that to other stray cops and help them out?
Yeah, I mean, it's a solid point, and I think the state rules are written in a way to acknowledge the fact that an officer may make a mistake, recognize that mistake, learn from it, and it doesn't necessarily preclude them from being a good employee elsewhere if they are fired from one department and are hired at the next. And so the rules for certifying officers kind of have that built in. At the same time, what we've found and what other scholarship on wandering officers in other states have found is that officers who are wandering officers, officers who are fired from one department and find work at the next, are more likely to conduct misconduct at their next agency. And that makes them a riskier hire for a lot of these places.
Lucas Tomei is a reporter of a three-part series called Stray Cops for Carolina Public Press. He's here along with Frank Taylor, the executive director of that organization. You can read all three articles at their website, carolinapublicpress.org, or ours, wfae.org. We have a lot to talk about, including the severity of this problem, why it persists, and possible solutions as we go through the hour. We're coming right back. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about Stray Cops, a three-part series from Carolina Public Press with Frank Taylor, the executive director of that organization, and Lucas Tomei, who did the legwork. He was the reporter on the series, wrote all three articles for Carolina Public Press. You start your second article in this series, Lucas, writing about Catherine Netter, who nearly two decades ago was a detention officer with the Guilford County Sheriff's Office. She volunteered as a young officer to assist the force in background checks and eventually became a full-time recruiter and background investigator for them. And she told you that part of the problem in getting details on an applicant's previous employment is that their former employer controls what you see, not just you as a reporter, but the other recruiters from other agencies. But she was more specific than that. What did she tell you?
Yeah, well, what Ms. Netter said was essentially that one major concern of hers when she was going to these past agencies to do background checks on officers that the Guilford County Sheriff's Office was interested in hiring was that allegations of misconduct or things that should end up in a personnel file may not be there at all. So it's not even that she couldn't access the files. But a worry that things which should be in a personnel file may not be there.
And
And
why
another
would that
concern,
be? Why would that be in a police department?
it could be, especially in smaller departments, that leadership wants to protect an officer who may be accused of misconduct or accused of wrongdoing. We saw that in the case of Mark Oakley. It could be for any number of reasons. It could be someone not wanting to fill out the paperwork, but it's hard to say specifically without asking these leaders at these small departments. But that was a major concern that she would run into.
And as you have alluded to, if an individual resigns under a cloud or is asked to resign to protect his or her reputation or that of the department, it is much harder to track that individual compared to if that individual had been fired outright. Why wouldn't you make a note of that in a personnel file that the individual was asked to resign or resigned because of X? Why wouldn't you put that in the file?
It could be out of respect for that officer. It could just be easier for them to allow that officer to go to another agency without much trouble. So they may give them a sort of a pass from another agency and let them move on.
So, Frank, you work for an organization, you direct an organization. Would this be common to all organizations? Would organizations, the heads of these organizations, the heads of personnel departments, be working to protect employees who have resigned because they did something wrong? Is that ordinary in the course of
Well,
employment?
it's not extremely extraordinary, but it's certainly the norm is not for that to happen so much. I think one thing I'll say, just some experience and observations from years of working in journalism, specifically in North Carolina, cases that are older cases we didn't go into in this series that help with background knowledge. I know of cases where special exceptions were made for people because of who they're related to. Especially in small town North Carolina. One particular case I covered years ago, where there was a particularly brutal attack on a person in a jail cell in one very small county, and the person's stepfather was a judge. So he pops up as a homicide detective in another county and lo and behold, does a horrible job there. But they were able to keep things out of his record because of favors. I think that kind of thing happens. There's a lot of different scenarios, but I think also they're concerned about liability in some cases. And it's like, well, maybe there's an agreement not to disclose things. Whether that should be happening under North Carolina law is a good question, but sometimes you don't know what you don't know.
And so that means that this 679 number of wandering cops is likely to be an undercount, correct? Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Evidently, Frank, if an officer was fired in another state and finds employment as an officer in North Carolina, that information is difficult to uncover as well. So evidently, this is a nationwide problem. How would you characterize the seriousness of this problem? In other words, put the number of officers you defined as wandering or stray cops, which is 679, somewhere in that area, into context of all the officers working in law enforcement agencies in the state. How many officers would that include? What's the per capita percentage? Go ahead, Lucas.
I think a good way to think about it is that's about 1 in 50 officers working in the state. So 2% of the active officers we found had been previously dismissed, and we know that that number is likely higher based on officers who have resigned. It doesn't include officers who maybe face disciplinary action from a federal agency, from say an officer worked for CBP or ICE and was fired and then finds work in local law enforcement. They wouldn't be included in that data set. The same goes for, as you mentioned, officers who came from out of state. We know anecdotally that agencies in recent years were making recruiting pushes for officers coming from outside of North Carolina, and we're not sure how well those officers were vetted.
And that data set is 4 years old. It's dates back to 2022 because of the law change that we've already talked about. So could the problem be worse? Could it be better? Could it be the same?
The simple answer is we don't know. And it's very probable that the problem could have gotten better because we actually have seen some action. Anecdotally, we've heard that the standards commissions in charge of certifying officers have been a little bit more proactive in recent years in terms of revoking or denying certifications of officers who do wrongdoing. But we just don't know without the numbers in hand.
Was there any way for you to know of the officers who either resigned under a cloud or who had been fired yet hired to be officers at other agencies? Was there any way for you to determine whether or not they went on to commit significant infractions in their new jobs and what kind of harm that does or does not put the public make the public face?
So we can find anecdotal examples from lawsuits or court filings, but it is extremely hard because there is a lack of a large-scale data set kept by the state and that tracks police misconduct. So in our analysis, we did find that officers who are dismissed from one agency are more likely to get dismissed from a future agency. What we're missing is the context behind those dismissals because it's just not easily accessible.
Frank, your organization, Carolina Public Press, created a chart based on this 2022 data showing the number of previously dismissed officers at various law enforcement agencies and security firms across the state, because some of these folks work for private organizations. If those agencies took a look at the chart that you published, would they be surprised, or do they already know this information?
I would suspect, without having asked them directly, that it's going to vary by organization. I have a feeling some of them know very well that this is the case and they may not care. And keep in mind, not all of these are officers who were fired for misconduct. You have officers, police officers work at will in North Carolina. So sometimes you have a police officer who just butts heads with the sheriff or maybe is at political odds with the sheriff, particularly with sheriff's departments, that happens. But certainly, there are officers who were involved in some type of serious misconduct that are in this data set, and we think some of the agencies are just not doing effective background checks, and other ones maybe they said, well, we'll give this person a chance for whatever reason. We see evidence that very small agencies have a tendency to hire a higher percentage of officers who are officers in this data set. We suspect it's because of pressure to be able to fill spaces, and there's just a limited recruiting pool for them.
It's difficult to talk about numbers like this on the radio because you can't see them. That's why newspapers and publications like yours exist. You can actually read this and understand it. But let's go through a few of them. These individuals are employed in departments statewide. And here in our area, you report that the Mecklenburg County Sheriff, and this is 2022 numbers now, but the Mecklenburg County Sheriff's Office had five previously dismissed officers on their staff in 2022. Five among 267 officers. CMPD had five out of 1,668 officers. Union County, four out of 238. The Davidson College Campus Police, two out of eight. CMS Police had one previously dismissed officer on their staff. And there is almost always at least one officer fitting that description in all of the departments surrounding Charlotte. As you report, some of these officers were dismissed, others resigned, and in many cases, criminal charges were never filed, and there was no trial, although some civil cases have resulted in monetary awards in some cases. Lucas, if these cases never went to trial, can we give credence to the allegations? I mean, you're not guilty in America until you've been proven so by a jury trial.
Yeah, well, you'll notice in our reporting that we actually refrained from publishing names of these officers that we deemed wandering officers. These are officers who, again, were previously dismissed from past departments, so that doesn't include resignations. We only published the names of officers who we could get context behind their separations from agencies. So, yeah, I think that's an important caveat to keep in mind when we look at some of these county level numbers, that these are 2022 numbers, and we don't exactly know the context behind these specific separations.
Is the fact that you're innocent until proven guilty in America possibly a factor in why some of these departments hire these individuals who perhaps resigned under a cloud or were fired and but never went to trial? Frank, you want to answer that?
Yeah, I think it's definitely a factor. I also feel like it's a bit of a cop-out at times. And, you know, we're talking about hiring. We're not talking about sending somebody to jail. So the question is, do they at least look at them before they hire them and say, okay, how serious was what you did? You know, that's, I think, the key point is, what is it that got you in trouble the last place? I think one of the factors is that there is a decertification process in North Carolina. And I think sometimes there's an assumption, well, they weren't decertified, so maybe they're okay. But when we look at the rules around decertification, there are real questions about how effective that process is. And, you know, I think there's a concern that more officers perhaps are getting through that process without being decertified than should be the case, including some of the specific cases we looked at where there is evidence of somebody committing pretty serious acts of misconduct, including violent misconduct, at the next job or at multiple jobs.
Let's get into something that you alluded to a few minutes ago, Lucas, and that is that some of these officers who resign under a cloud or who are fired for misconduct and go on to get other jobs also go on to become the boss of some of these agencies. You write about one particular officer, former Warrenton Police Chief Gobel Lane, who lost his job with the Franklinton Police Department, went to work for three more agencies over 5 years before he became the chief. But a civil lawsuit came along in 2025 accusing him of protecting one of the officers we've already spoken about. What is Lane, Chief Lane, allegedly accused of doing?
Yeah, well, the lawsuit against Lane, which again, the plaintiffs in this civil lawsuit sued both him and Mark Oakley for these tasing incidents, which Oakley is accused of. Oakley tased three of these plaintiffs for what they say was without legal justification. So he's being sued for excessive force. He's also facing federal criminal charges in a separate case related to those same incidents. And it's important to take a look at Lane in this case because he's accused in the lawsuit of protecting Oakley while he was an officer there, not even necessarily against just the civilian complaints, but he also allegedly retaliated against other officers who made complaints or voiced their concerns about Oakley's conduct on the job.
Are both of those cases still pending?
They are both still pending, yes.
Did you talk to any of the officers that you write about throughout the course of this series about their individual situations? Would they speak to you? Did you speak to them?
We reached out to the departments where they work currently, also their legal representation in Oakley's case. We didn't get a response before the publication of this series.
I think we should stress again that although you're reporting specifically about North Carolina, this is not a problem that is unique to our state. This is happening nationwide, and the problem may be even worse in some jurisdictions than perhaps it is here. Reuters reports that studies show it is exceedingly rare for police departments to or sheriff's departments to fire officers, that arbitrators routinely overturn discipline, and that fired cops routinely return to law enforcement, often at their previous employer and with back pay. Frank, do you know if that is also the case in our state?
That wasn't something we looked at as directly. We're primarily looking at officers that move between departments. I'm sure there are instances of this. I suspect that the labor laws involved might be different in this state compared to a lot of places nationally. And so I don't know that this is much of a factor, but we didn't zoom in on that particular issue as much with our reporting. Lucas,
One
you
of the
may
things,
have something to comment on that.
go ahead.
I will say we did see cases where an officer had been fired from one department, moved on, and then actually returned to the original department that fired them. I didn't look into specific context of those instances, but those officers do exist.
We talked a little bit about the liability issues that maybe some of these the law enforcement departments feel as they check, as they're being asked to give information about previous employees to potential new employers. And this is something that every employer faces when you check the resumes and the references of individuals. Former employers pretty much stick to the script. Yes, they worked here. That's pretty much it. Is that really now the case with all employers? Is it becoming increasingly difficult in all ventures to check on past performance?
Yeah, absolutely. And I have worked for organizations that said we will not give references. We will only confirm employment. And there's a variety of practices, but increasingly it's going in that direction. It's like we're going to give you very minimal information. And each company has its own rules, but it's steering toward less and less coming out about past
Well, are we
performance.
shooting ourselves in the foot by doing it that way? I mean, it seems to me if you're giving out accurate, true information, whether it's derogatory or not, it's true. How can you be sued?
You can be sued by anybody at any time for anything. And so it costs you money even to win a lawsuit.
Okay, so we'll look into other aspects of the liability of all this and what this actually ends up costing taxpayers, according to this three-part series published by Carolina Public Press called Straight Cops. When we come back, we're here with Lucas Tomei, the reporter on that series, and Frank Taylor, the executive director of that organization. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking today about a three-part series being published, available right now, called Stray Cops. It's part of an effort by the Carolina Public Press, and you can read these articles on their website, carolinapublicpress.org, or ours. And we're talking about it with the principal reporter on this series of articles, Lucas Tomei, and Frank Taylor, the executive director of that organization. Lucas, you report that although it's difficult for agencies to get information from previous employing agencies, and that separate agencies make those decisions, the state still has a role to play. You say that what the state can do through its two education standards and training commissions is grant, deny, and revoke certifications. And this has just come up in this conversation for all law enforcement officers working in the state. How can they do that without the very information that other potential employers are seeking from past employers?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it's something that's important for people to keep in mind when they think about this problem of wandering officers, is that the process of hiring and firing happens at the local level and doesn't necessarily mean that an officer cannot continue to work in law enforcement. But officers also must be certified by these state commissions, and these are processes that happen at the state level. And an officer is denied or revoked certification. That essentially means the end of their career in law enforcement. So there are specific processes in place, like an agency must notify the state standards commission whenever they hire or separate from an officer. And when they do separate from an officer, they must give reasons to the state. They must notify the state of any instances which would behoove the state to essentially review any reasons in which they might want to look at that officer's certification.
How often are certifications denied or revoked?
A lot less often than police officers are fired. So we don't have the most recent information on how many decertifications are happening, but we do know the processes, which is essentially whenever the state catches wind of an officer that they might want to review for decertification, they go through what's called a probable cause committee, which is housed under the Department of Justice. And this is essentially a group of law enforcement and law enforcement experts who vote on whether to decertify that officer. Although we do report that the instances in which they are required to decertify an officer, that's very narrow.
In writing about this, you, Lucas, asked the question, quote, "So why not mandate that the state decertify officers if they are dismissed from an agency?" Did you
Right.
find an answer?
Yeah, I mean, that seems like the most obvious solution to the problem is that when an officer is fired, they should be decertified. But I'd like to point out that we are not necessarily advocating for that because, as experts have pointed out, including Eddie Caldwell, who works for the Sheriff's Association of North Carolina, officers, as we mentioned earlier, are generally at-will employees. So they may be fired or dismissed for reasons that don't necessarily prevent them from being good employees somewhere else. Mr. Caldwell gave me the example of a hypothetical officer who may come in late 3 days in a row on the job, and their boss says, "That's unacceptable. I'm dismissing you." Well, if they go to another agency and recognize that they have a timeliness problem and they show up on time, and they may be a perfect employee after that. And that's a hypothetical situation, but that paints a picture of why firings don't necessarily lead to decertification. And what that does in turn is it gives the state a lot of leeway in terms of determining when they should take away an officer's certification.
So, Frank, there are these liability issues surrounding one employer telling another employer about the past performance of an employee that's under consideration to be hired. But then that agency may hire this questionable individual, and that person then may go on to commit some regrettable act. And then the hiring agency may itself find itself in some sort of jeopardy because they're being sued by a citizen. Which is worse? You're an employer, so tell me which is worse, hiring a potential, having a potential lawsuit come at you because you gave out information that another agency could use, or you hiring that individual and then them committing some horrible thing that leads you to be sued?
Well, it's never particularly good to be on either on the end of a lawsuit, but I think that the difference is in the perspective of the person in the situation. The problem is that it isn't the same situation. So the organization that let the person go is protecting themselves and to the best of their wisdom, however questionable that might be, and the agency that does the hiring is protecting themselves. I think, though, that where we're seeing a flaw in the process is that the hiring mechanism is where there's not enough screening being done. I mean, yes, there are cases where you're not getting the right information out of the previous employer, but there are also cases where they seem to have a good idea of what's going on and they hire them anyway. And that's where some of the cases are where we're seeing lawsuits. I would imagine it would be easier to win a lawsuit against a police agency that knew about the person's track record and hired them. In many cases, we're seeing agencies in the same county or an adjacent county, and these are not necessarily large population areas. There are areas where everybody knows everybody. Everybody knows everybody in the next county too. So if you go from, let's say, Washington County to Tyrell County, it's not really a news flash that you got into trouble at the last job. And so I think that's where I don't know what the outcome of these lawsuits are going to be, but that's where they're, going to be liable for making a decision when they perhaps should have known better.
And there have been lawsuits because officers acted incorrectly, and citizens are suing the police departments for which they work. Do we have any idea what that's costing taxpayers?
It's a great question, and we don't have specific numbers, but we do know that these lawsuits are costly for municipalities and counties. And that's something that actually Keisha James, attorney at the National Police Accountability Project, who's litigated cases of police misconduct in North Carolina, brought up to me as a potential reason for cities to kind of want to get on this problem. She litigated an instance of a former Washington County sheriff's deputy who was a wandering officer before he was hired in Washington County. He was fired for misconduct from the State Highway Patrol, and he was fired and later sued for an instance when he was in Washington County for making a violent arrest in which he essentially was accused of using excessive force against a detainee right outside the Washington County Courthouse. And it's important to point out too that that officer is still working in law enforcement. He works at the Tyrrell County Sheriff's Office. And that lawsuit settled. The terms of that settlement are confidential, which is another point of frustration for us as journalists. But it cost that it cost money to defend that lawsuit because it's not only suing the individual officer, but also the hiring agencies and police leadership for negligent hiring and training and retention practices.
North Carolina passed a law last year purportedly to fix this problem of not having sufficient information when hiring officers coming from other agencies. This new law requires agencies to, quote, review an applicant's complete personnel files going back 5 years before hiring them as law enforcement officers. Does this law also provide for previous employers to completely open those files for prospective employers to see the full record?
It's a good first step, and this actually originates from a recommendation made by the Sheriff's Association back in 2020. It took 5 years for the state legislature to act on it, but as you said, that law does address the problem that we mentioned earlier of previous employers not wanting to give up personnel files because of fears
So,
over
do under this
confidentiality
law,
laws.
do they have to now?
They have to now, but what it doesn't
Okay.
include is internal affairs investigations. And there's also no real teeth or mechanism for ensuring really that office that agencies are complying with this new rule.
This problem may have predated the George Floyd incident, but we know that nationwide since George Floyd, and since we've taken, well, since George Floyd, there's been a spotlight on police conduct. And that has caused some police officers to reconsider, not their conduct necessarily, but whether they want to remain a police officer or even become one. And retention and recruitment is a problem. A lack of qualified candidates is a problem for police departments nationwide. Is this playing a role in this, Lucas? Have you found that this is forcing some of these agencies to hire individuals they know have been a problem in the past, but they need to fill the slot?
Anecdotally, yes. It's hard to get vacancy rate statistics for agencies across the state, but we know that recruiting and retention of officers has been a major problem in the last 5, 6 years. And that's sort of paired with issues over stagnant pay in North Carolina. Actually, just recently in Raleigh, some of these state agencies, the State Highway Patrol, for example, have been kind of sounding the alarm about how difficult it has been to recruit and retain officers because pay is not increasing. So something I've heard from law enforcement leaders is that they are sort of having to make a choice over, do I leave these vacancies open or do I take a risk on an officer that maybe has a spotty track record just to make sure I have enough bodies on the street patrolling?
You devote, Lucas, your third of these three articles called Stray Cops to looking at solutions. And we've already referenced this at one point in this conversation. You point to the High Point Police Department as priding themselves on not hiring these wandering officers. How do they accomplish that, given the lack of transparency that we've already talked about this morning? Why are they so sure that they have succeeded in their goal?
Yeah, so one sort of really interesting thing they do that Chief Curtis Cheeks told me about is that they require all of their applicants to not only give information about their past employment history and criminal history, but they also have to undergo a polygraph or a lie detector test, attesting to the truthfulness of those answers. And something he told me was that, sometimes applicants who know that they may have something unsavory show up in their past will kind of call ahead and say, look, do I have to undergo this polygraph? Or he said they'll give some sort of what he called cute answers when asked why they left their last apartment. And he said that's a red flag for us. And oftentimes further investigation will show that there is a good reason for not hiring those officers.
I guess I should look this up. Maybe you know the answer, so I'll ask it anyway. If you don't, that's fine. Do polygraphs actually work? Do these lie detector tests actually work? Would they be admissible as evidence in a court of law? And if not, does that delegitimize their use in this instance?
In terms of being admissible, I'm not quite sure, but Chief Curtis Cheek seemed pretty optimistic, or not optimistic, but gung ho for this strategy, and especially just as a deterrent for officers who may just be worried about something showing up.
And are they bragging in High Point about them not having any stray officers on their payroll? Is that something that they actively sought to do over the years?
Funnily enough, I was actually the one to inform them that, according to the data, they had never hired a previously dismissed cop ever. And they were very happy to know that, but also not surprised because they felt really strongly about their background investigation processes, which they say are more stringent than most agencies in North Carolina.
As possible solutions, you say that the state could adopt rules through legislation requiring that an officer be decertified if a civil verdict or settlement resulted in a substantial monetary reward to another party as a result of misconduct. Is that even on the General Assembly's radar?
It's hard to say. I mean, the short answer is no, probably not. When I talked to Democratic Representative Marsha Mori, who was actually a member of the task force for racial equity in policing and law enforcement, she said that the legislative appetite for law enforcement reform has really decreased in recent years. And so she's hopeful maybe with some leadership changes coming into the legislature that that may change.
Are you
But
saying that
right.
Phil Berger was obstructive to these kinds of changes?
We are not reporting that specifically, but Marsha Mori was hopeful that maybe with some new leadership in the legislature, there may be renewed interest in some of these reforms.
Very carefully worded, Frank.
Yeah, it's worth pointing out that the individual who defeated Phil Berger, and he won't necessarily be stepping into a leadership role, but Sam Page, as a sheriff in Rockingham County, had been active on some of the panels that had recommended a lot of reforms. And so he already is in tune with this issue. Now he'll be coming in as a junior member of the Senate. But we are seeing some potential new life into people who are thinking about these matters.
Yeah, the Sam Page's campaign against Phil Berger was out of our listening area, but because Phil Berger is so important to the state politics that we talked about it a lot, but not about the race necessarily, but I understand that Sheriff Sam Page campaigned on transparency. That
Yes,
would
he
be
did
correct.
absolutely,
Okay.
and as Frank mentioned, he was one of 10 sheriffs that created a report in 2020 put out by the Sheriffs Association, which made recommendations for curbing the hiring of wandering officers.
Very quickly, because I have about 30 seconds left. You also say, Lucas, that any non-disclosure agreements could be banned in such settlements in the interest of sunshine going forward, but that would have to be legislatively approved by Raleigh. Again, any interest in that or any talk about that in Raleigh?
Yeah, and one example of that happening is the earlier case we talked about in Washington County, where that they came to a settlement agreement, and we just don't know the details of it.
Lucas Tomei is the reporter in this three-part series called Stray Cops from Carolina Public Press that you can see on their website, carolinapublicpress.org, or ours, WFAE.org. He was here along with Frank Taylor, the executive director of that organization. Great reporting. Thank you so much for the hour.
Charlotte Talks is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Gabe Altieri. The senior producer is Sarah D'Elia. The producer is Chris Jones. For more information on Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or to subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at mazdaofsouthcharlotte.com.